Do we have anyone missing? No? Oh, yeah.
Okay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen in TV land, and good evening to my fellow board members here. We're holding the regular meeting Thursday, October 1st, 2015, of the Harbor Advisory Board. It looks like we have all present except for one, Dana McClish. Polly, is Dana, did he call or anything? So as of right now, Dana is not here. So you can take note of that. So we do have a quorum. And what I'd like to do right now is bow our heads and have a moment of silence. And then get up and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready? Start. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you very much. And right now, this is the time that we have chair or advisory board member announcements and presentations. Ron, do you have anything to share with us tonight?
I do not.
Neil?
I do not have anything either.
The only thing I have, and I know we'll bring this up, is this Saturday is the Morro Bay Harbor Festival. The Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department will also be there. With a booth. So all the public, come on out, enjoy it. This year it's free. Eric is going to be talking about it a little bit in the staff report of logistics and stuff. But the other thing that I did want to mention, our website is now up and running, the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department. It is www.friendsoftmhd.org. So if everyone can go there, we are now 51% of our goal for one of the things that we're trying to purchase is a beach wheelchair, another one for the Harbor Department. So public, go into our website, see what we've done. It's a beautiful website actually put together by Rock Harbor Marketing, and some of the members up here have looked at it. I am pretty proud of it, and I'm proud of the Harbor Department for putting a lot of work into it. So that's all I have right now. Lynn? Tom?
I would just like to say that, yes, the Harbor Festival is this Saturday, and there's going to be a lot of fresh seafood there for the public to enjoy.
Gene?
No, I have nothing.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, could you remind us of your rock event?
Yeah, we are all set, actually, for our movie at the Rock. The only thing that we have not, and that's November 13th at 6:30, we will be having a drive-in theater. We haven't finalized the movie, which we will by this Saturday. Becca has been gone all week. Actually, she's down in Long Beach writing some safety protocol for boating. And I'll be meeting her this Saturday at the Harbor Festival, and we're going to finalize the movie. And we're pretty excited about it. We have a 42-foot by 28-foot screen that we're going to be hoisting on some flatbeds so that we'll probably be able to get between 150 and 200 cars, plus a lot of people will be able to walk in and utilize beach chairs up in the front part to see our inaugural movie, which will benefit the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department. Thanks, Ron. Neil?
Tom, could you just explain more about kind of the details of the Harbor Festival this weekend, because it's changed, just so everybody in TV land can hear about the new details of where it's going to take place?
I think Eric's doing that in his staff report.
Mind.
Oh, apologize. Let's have a look at the minutes from the September 3rd, 2015 meeting. Anyone has taken a look? Did they have any corrections, any changes, or would they like to recommend to approve? Neil?
So the minutes were correct, but I believe Polly on the staff report heading for our ad hoc committee for the finance, I don't believe it was changed on there. Okay. That's all I've got.
So Neil,
will you... Okay, so they're going to take care of that. That was the response.
Good. All right, do I hear a motion to approve the minutes from September 3rd, 2015? A second?
I'll second that.
Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, and then we also had a special meeting, which was the Marine Sanctuary proposal. I'd like to have everyone take a look at that. And if there's any corrections or changes, please feel free to submit them right now. Gene?
Yes, on our recommendation, was our vote 3-1?
No, that our vote was 7-0.
Oh, 7-0.
Yeah. 3-1
the council's vote was 3-1.
3-1, that's okay. Correct. To utilize the same resolution they had from 2 years ago. So, hearing no other comments, anyone would like to approve the September 15th special meeting?
So moved.
Hear a second? Tom? I have a first and second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, those two things are approved. And now we have Eric and his Harbor Department status report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and welcome back yet again. Seems like we were just meeting together because we were. So recent activities and actions and whatnot is a few things that were too late for print that I'll add on here at the end, if hopefully I will remember. Recent City Council action, the September 8th meeting, the first council meeting this last month, council approved a temporary license agreement for Bob Fowler at Marbury Landing to use a portion of our harbor yard to build his new docks that are going to be going in as part of his phase 1B, I think, for his new dock project down there at Morro Bay Landing, which is the old Verges Landing. This is for the slips that will go between Harbor Hut and Gafco, where there's just a long dock now. They're going to be building out some fingers there as well. So those will be getting built in our yard here shortly, hopefully, and then floated out into place. Also, the September 8th meeting, we did a one-year review of off-the-boat fish sales. As you know, I think the meeting prior to that, Harbor Advisory Board meeting prior to that, we recommended making that a permanent allowance to allow fishermen to sell their wares off of any of our public docks. Harbor Advisory Board recommended doing that, and the City Council followed suit and made that for as a permanent allowance. And then once we circle back around with our rules and regulations and Muni Code changes, we'll be writing that in as part of that. We'll enact it now. Obviously, it's an allowance, but we'll write it into our rules when we do that. Larger update. At the September 22nd meeting, the council appointed Councilman John Heading as the temporary liaison to the Harbor Advisory Board until Matt Makowetsky can get back. As you know, Matt's out on a hopefully short medical leave and isn't able to do his council duties, so he's off the council as well for now. So hopefully Matt will be back, and we wish him well. And then at the September 22 meeting, the council considered the Harbor Advisory Board's recommendation to oppose a National Marine Sanctuary designation. It was a long meeting. I think that item probably went, I'm going to say, 2 or maybe 3 hours. A lot of impassioned talk on both sides of the issue. At the end of the night, the council voted 3-1 to leave Resolution 1812 standing, which was the last resolution that was done in opposition to Marine Sanctuary designation. But to invite NOAA, not NOAA the city councilman, but NOAA, N-O-A-A, which is the parent of the sanctuary program, to come in some sort of an informational forum to be determined for the community to come in and answer a lot of the questions that the council wanted answered, that they felt they didn't have enough to go on to make any kind of a different recommendation at the meeting on the 22nd. So I'm working with the city manager and with NOAA and OAA to try and figure out when we're going to do that. NOAA is set to make a ruling on the Chumash proposal, from what I understand, still on the 5th, and determine whether or not that proposal will be put on the inventory list for possible future consideration. The 5th being Monday, even at the council meeting, we talked timing, and there's no way to get that public forum done in between now and then, so we'll see what happens with that sanctuary proposal, with the Chumash proposal, and then the community will hopefully sometime in November or December get together in some sort of a forum and discuss the sanctuary and have some informational items brought forward and hopefully get some of those questions answered so the council can possibly look at it again later. Harbor activity. Numerous great white shark sightings over the last month. I think they have, knock on wood, slowed down a little bit. But on August 29th, that was probably the most prominent, was the attack on that surfer at Morro Strand State Beach, Tascadero State Beach, where they bit the large chunk out of that red surfboard. Pretty high-profile case there. Fortunately, she wasn't injured. September 2, we had a credible sighting for a shark off Morro Rock that we actually were able to go back to the Surfline surf cam. You can rewind that surf cam. You can see when it happened. You can't see the shark. You can never see anything in the water. But you see a couple people paddle in, and all of a sudden you see everybody paddle in. So that was kind of interesting to watch. On September 9th, a few days later, we received another report of an approximate 10 to 12-foot shark off the Abalone Farm in Cayucas from some fishermen in a boat fishing in our unseasonably warm waters. And then on what's the date of the most recent one? On the 14th, several surfer witnesses witnessed a sea lion being attacked at the what's called the Cables surf spot, which is kind of the base of the sand spit, which is where the fellow was attacked a couple of years ago around Christmas time. And then on the 22nd, we were going out with Pacific Wildlife Care with several marine birds and sighted what was likely two sharks, at least one, right outside the harbor mouth. So we seem to be under constant advisement at this point. But like I said, knock on wood, things seem to have slowed down a little bit. Water really isn't cooling off. We've had a lot of exotics out there. People are seeing marlin. There's bluefin tuna. People are reporting yellowtail, skipjack tuna, a lot of strange stuff out there because the water's in the mid to high 60s, which is pretty unusual. On September 4th, approximately 8 p.m., a man unfortunately fell overboard from one of the dinner cruise boats in the bay. Somebody on board jumped in to assist. More of our oyster company folks came along shortly thereafter that were coming back from doing their unloading and whatnot down at the launch ramp and helped the man out of the water and started resuscitation efforts, brought him down to the Coast Guard dock, Morbay Fire, everybody descended, tried to revive him, but unfortunately he succumbed to his injuries. And life support measures didn't work in that case, but unfortunately that happened. So, just a reminder for the public out there, just when you're on a boat, be careful. One hand for the boat. Always put a hand on the boat and put your other hand on something else, but always hold on to the boat when you're on board. Recent Harbor Department activity, Cal Poly's WOW Week, the week of welcome when all the new students come in for this new quarter and the new year. They gather what they call WOW leaders, and they bring these new students. They orient them to the school, to the community, to San Luis Obispo, to the county, and all the strange and wondrous and great things we have in this county for them to do. They've invited us in, City of Morro Bay, in for probably the last 7 or 8 years to give some water safety lecturing. So I went with my lifeguard supervisor, Kyle Schaefer, this year, and we give a 15-20-minute talk on just basic water safety, what to look out for. What to do in case something does happen, because they're all over the county in the lakes and on the ocean, and they're kayaking, and you've probably seen them. They descend on Morro Bay, and every rental kayak in town is rented over that weekend. So that was a good event there, and it's in front of about 700 of the WOW leaders, about 700 kids that step up every year and chaperone all the new students in. It's really a great program. During the week of September 14th, our department personnel all trained with the fire department and a new CPR method that's being adopted in the county and most emergency responding agencies around the country, if not the world, are adopting. It's called high-power CPR, where they're getting away from sort of the traditional, two rescue breaths and then a number of compressions and breaths and compressions and different combinations that tend to get confusing because it's been changing over the years. And they've gone to a whole new system that is much simpler. It's actually proven to be much more effective. There's been, you know, a number of studies done on this new process. And while I don't have the exact, and I don't recall the exact statistics where it's been employed, and I think they got some data out of Santa Barbara County, it creates a dramatic increase in survival rates for cardiac patients. So we'll be employing that. Hopefully we don't have to, but we will. It's also called high-power CPR or pit crew CPR. So we'll be implementing that if we need to. Harbor Patrol, on the week of September 21st, we're receiving SCBAs, which are self-contained breathing apparatus from the fire department. We're not fully trained structural firefighters. If there's a fire on the waterfront, we're there to help the fire department. But as you know, anybody that's seen a waterfront fire or a boat fire, they create toxic clouds of smoke that can be pretty bad to even be around, even if you're not near the flames. So we've gotten SCBAs from the fire department. They've gotten them through grant programs, and we'll be equipping our folks to use those in training and hopefully never have to use them. Again, knock on wood, but at least now we'll be able to safely deliver our fire personnel where they need to be and assist in a much better manner. Earthquake, September 16th, you might have heard about it, down in Chile. 8.3 earthquake on the Richter scale caused a tsunami advisory, kind of a strange area that they advised. It was from San Onofre to Ragged Point. I guess their modeling indicated that's where there may be a tsunami, from what I understood from talking to my peers up and down the coast. Santa Cruz, Crescent City, they all felt it. It was kind of like the Chilean earthquake we had a few years back. Just surges coming in. We had surges going up 2 or 3 feet over about 20 minutes. The water would come up 2 or 3 feet and then go way down 2 or 3 feet. And that kind of went on all day long. But no damage reported. I don't think there's any damage reported throughout the state that I heard of. It was early hours of the morning that it arrived, about 5:30, so we were down pretty early. The city opened up its emergency operations center, and we had fire department and police and everybody in and coming up with a coordinated effort. And we advised everybody on the bay to get off the water. By the time the first surges arrived and what was really seen as the maximum, it was deemed pretty much a non-threat at that point. But still, something to be wary of, and pretty awesome just to, you know, think about an event that happens 10,000-odd miles away and creates ripples in your pond coming that far and make your harbor water level go up and down. We did also make phone notifications. I know Alan Allward, one of his concerns we had, I think either after the Chilean earthquake or maybe the Japanese quake that did cause damage, was vessel owners being notified. And we didn't happen to have enough personnel that came in. One of our reserve officers went through our list of all our slip holders and tried to call everybody on the list. We either left a message or did contact everybody. And then we went down the leaseholder list and tried to contact all of our waterfront leaseholders. So did implement a kind of a phone tree. I think a lot of people had already heard about it. I think most people already heard about it. News travels fast these days with the internet, but still some people didn't, and they appreciated knowing about it, even though it was in the wee hours of the morning. Coastal cleanup day, September 18th and 19th. We transported coastal cleanup folks over to the sand spit and back, Morbid Beautiful folks as well. As usual, they collected a fair amount of stuff that washes up over there on the sand spit. So that was a good event. And finally, that I don't have written on here, but Bill, you made mention of it in talking about the movie night. Becca Kelly, our patrol supervisor, is down in L.A., helping work with the Department of Boating and Waterways in their whole Harbor Patrol officer training program that they've been doing for probably 25 or 30 years, that all of us coastal agencies have availed ourselves to send our personnel to. It's the closest equivalent to the Harbor Patrol Academy that the police has for Police Academy and Fire has for Fire Academy, and they've revamped it over the last few years. The Port of L.A., L.A. Harbor Police have created a new academy there where they're doing most of the law enforcement training up and down the coast for all the agencies, and now Department of Boating and Waterways is integrating into that and revamping all their classes, and Becca was asked to come down and help integrate that and help them with creating the program and rewriting some of their protocols. So that's a pretty cool deal that she got down for that. She'll hopefully be back Friday, I think, right? Upcoming events. As was mentioned, a couple days from now, the new and improved Harbor Festival. On the 34th annual, down in the main core of the waterfront from about, I think, Harbor Street to Marina Street. Closing off the Embarcadero through that section. You'll still be able to get down on Harbor and hang a right and Marine and hang a left, so you'll still be able to get to the launch ramp. The folks that need to get to the hotels, the Anderson Inn and the Gray's Inn, will still be able to get there, but they're shutting down the main part of the waterfront. And the businesses are heavily involved. All of our waterfront businesses are heavily involved. They'll be manning booths, bringing their food out and bringing their wares out. Commercial fishermen are taking just about all the street end, little parking areas, and bringing in different food and fish products and barbecues and whatnot. Hopefully, I'll put Tom on the spot, and hopefully we'll have a couple of fishing boats down there to for folks to look at. And then it'll be a free event. It's Saturday only. I think it starts at noon till 9 p.m. It ends with a fireworks show at 9 p.m. Free event. It does have a limit to where, it's not sort of fenced in like before. But alcohol needs to be contained with inside the event, so ask people to respect that, and you can wander in and out freely. And music in the Embarcadero parking lot down there, the old trailer park parking lot, good music events going on all day long, food, vendors, but smaller in scale and really more focusing back on the harbor and our fishermen and our local businesses. So we're looking forward to seeing how that goes. We'll have our touch tank down there. I'm not sure which street end we're going to be on, but we'll have our touch tank and probably close down by the friends there as well.
We have an octopus, too. Kyle informed me today.
Yeah. So hopefully we got some good critters for our touch tank. This event has occurred now, but I didn't have it in time for the writing. On September 26th, last September, the Morbi Estuary had its 20th anniversary party down at Windows on the Water. They invited all their personnel, past and present, and from what I understand, I unfortunately wasn't able to make it. I had family engagements prior. It sounded like a good event. They had some food and beverages down at Windows and just kind of a get-together of all the folks that helped create the program to begin with and everybody that's involved with it now. And also on the 26th of September, Depth Perceptions, Diving Services, they've been putting together an annual bay dive cleanup. It's been focusing under the T-piers primarily, but this year they went underneath the new docks and the wharf at around Giovanni's Fish Market area. And then our boat slips down there. They had 51 participants from all over the county. Their average dive time is about 50 minutes. They spent about 4.5 hours on the bottom. And the interesting list of items, 13 tires, 10 sections of pipe, rubber floor mat, 69 bottles, 8 cans, 6 burlap sacks, 4 plastic bottles, 1 foam mat, metal sorting table, mop handle, 3 coils of rope, hand truck, grapple hook, toilet tank, marine toilet, miscellaneous metal pieces, 2 crab nets, 2 electric motors, crock pot, milk crate, 2 swordfish bills, interesting, 2 metal pots, fish skull, bumper, 5 sections of rubber dock molding, ladder, garden hose, fishing pole and reel, 2 bricks, dust buster, boot, 3 crab traps, radio, CRT screen, other electronic devices, coffee mugs, stool, bilge pump, radar, flip-flops, baby stroller, knives, ashtrays, tape measure, sunglasses, large fish trap, and lots of fishing line and hooks. So they do obviously a pretty fine accounting of all the things they bring up. Great that they do that. We've been trying to move them around the bay a little bit, not just focus on the piers. And again, encourage people to, make sure you hang on to your stuff when you're going on and off your boat and try not to drop in the water. But a lot of interesting stuff down there on the bottom. And, oh my God, there's more. Morbay Surfboard Art Festival, a month-long event beginning in October at various locations around town. If you recall last year, number of different types and styles of art on different surfboards that are spread around town for display, and then it culminates in a get-together, a date I don't have at this point. It's a benefit for Project Surf Camp and Morbay and Bloom. Any proceeds go to those two organizations. CMANC, the California Marine Affairs and Navigation Conference. I attended the fall meeting of CMANC up in Lafayette on September 16th to 18th. The usual Corps of Engineers was there. A lot of the harbors and ports were there. It's kind of the kickoff to the season to start figuring out what we're going to advocate for when we go to Washington, D.C. Primary topics were potential reauthorization of the National Marine Sanctuaries Act. Congresswoman Lois Capps co-authored a bill several years ago to try and reauthorize the National Marine Sanctuary Act. It failed in Congress, died in Congress. The act is supposed to be reauthorized every 5 years. It hasn't been. It's not by Congress. It's been administratively reauthorized. And the National Marine Sanctuaries Act is where if there's holistic changes to the act that can be made or should be made, that's the time to really do it. So if that comes around, we'll may end up having a part in that. Also, topics of the day were the upcoming federal FY16 budget process. As of this writing, I stated it was the likely stalemate that would result in a continuing resolution. Well, guess what? It resulted in a continuing resolution. There was no budget come October 1st. The president signed a CR that keeps the federal government operating until February. The good news on that from the Corps of Engineers and their funding standpoint is when a CR is enacted, it uses last year's funding level as what they're going to use until they adopt a real budget. Last year's funding level for Corps of Engineers was pretty good. And if they maintain that, it's not a bad thing. So we'll see where the budget ends up going after December. Also, we're still advocating for fuller spending of the Harbors and Watercraft, or the, at the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund, the federal fund where container taxes are paid that pays for a lot for the Corps of Engineers and a lot of the improvements that occur up and down the coast in our ports and harbors, trying to get a fuller funding of that. Other issues of the day are emerging contaminants of concern. You know, right now there's a suite of things that must be tested for in dredge material, you know, from heavy metals to, you know, DDT and other things. There's emerging contaminants of concern that are starting to raise to levels of potential permitting trigger issues where permits may now have different contaminants now. And really a lot of it's come from the testing. Science has gotten a lot better, and we can test for different things. And so there's things that are emerging out of that we're discovering that are in our waters and our dredge materials that may end up being an issue, but we'll see where that goes. Then another major change in D.C., as you probably know, Congresswoman Lois Capps is no longer going to run. She's going to run her term out here, as is Senator Boxer and Congresswoman Janice Hahn. She's down in the L.A. area, and she's a big supporter of California's ports and harbors and CMEX. So there's going to be some big changes in the federal government in terms of our representation, so we'll see where that goes. And then in terms of our budget, for the Corps of Engineers, we're still advocating for $7.5 million for the Corps to come in and do a whole channel dredging. As you know, those of you that are on the water, I discovered rather embarrassingly a few weeks ago when I had to tow a boat in front of Tidelands Dock. I ran soundly aground while towing that boat because there's a big high spot out there. Because I don't get out there often enough to know where those high spots are. But it's time, you know, 2010 was when it was done last, 2009, 2010, so we'll cross our fingers for that funding. City Voice, it's a new program that the city of Morro Bay is embarking on. Through an organization called City Voice. It's basically asking the citizens and visitors of Morro Bay what you want Morro Bay to look like in 20 years. There's several signs placed around town. You can go to the City of Morro Bay's website, and you can call in. You call into a number, and if you're in one of the areas that has a sign, there's a code on that sign that you enter that code, and let's say you're out at the Rock, and the Rock code for the Rock is, you know, XYZ. You're out at the Rock, and you phone in, and you say, you know, I would like to see this, that, or the other thing, and and all those comments get put into a hopper, and the city will put it all together, and a report will come out of it, and we'll see what kind of data comes out of it. If you don't have any code, you just enter 004. That's kind of the generic code. You can also go on the city's website and find a link to that City Voice part of the website and click in directly to it and not leave a phone code necessarily. You can put in a written suggestion, and so it started on Thursday, September 17th, and goes to October 12th. And again, the City of Morro Bay's website is probably the best place, and it's a good place to share, you know, your visions and values and what you really want to see this city do. And the city is going to take all that information and with City Voice, which is a nationwide organization that does these sort of city visioning and planning efforts, and we've sort of been chosen as a sort of a pilot program for a small city to do. And we'll see where that goes. And with that, I think I'm out of air. Any questions, comments?
One comment is that I really would like to thank the Harbor Department. I understand when the tsunami warning was, we had a contingent all night monitoring every 2 hours what was going on. And so our staff in the Harbor Department was monitoring that just in case there was a tremendous emergency. And I think we ought to give those people kudos.
Yeah, you're right. And thank you, Bill. I appreciate that. So, yeah, once the nature of the warning was vetted out a little more by the Tsunami Warning Center folks, and they knew, had a pretty good idea what was coming, and I think it was a statewide call-in where every up and down the coast, a conference call would occur every 2 hours, and all the agencies would check in, and the Tsunami folks would update anything that's been seen. They'd know, okay, what's happened in Central and South America, and so they had kind of a running commentary of what was going on. So, yeah, it was every 2 hours we were checking into that.
Gene?
On the Harbor Festival, the firework display, do you know where the barge is going to be located?
Yeah, roughly off of probably the north, the middle end of Marina Square. I'm kind of pushed up against the sand spit as far as we can get. It's going to be fairly high tide in the middle of the day to get it out there, but it's like a 0.3 at 10 o'clock at night, so it's probably going to be sitting on the bottom. We've just got to place it somewhere where we can get a patrol boat to it if something goes wrong and we need to get a boat to it. We don't want to push it off too far to where we can't get to it, so we got to be able to access it. So, kind of about the middle of the embarcadero.
Thank you. Anyone else? Comments? Ron?
Eric, I note in this current Harbor Department status report that you just shared with us as it relates to the Harbor Advisory Board's special meeting regarding marine sanctuary issues. The staff report states that the board's unanimous recommendation to continue to oppose National Marine Sanctuary designation in our waters. I think it's important to point out that that was part of the motion, and the other part of the motion focused in particular on the Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary nomination, or application, I should say. I mean, that was really the focus of that special meeting, was that particular application, irrespective of the name of the application. But I mean, the meat and bones of that application. The second thing on the staff report, just a question I have. You talked about how the Harbor Patrol folks are training in high-powered CPR. Do you have any idea how the public could access that training?
So the public-type CPR, and even in the old, prior to the high-power CPR, the emergency responder CPR was different than the public CPR. I believe once American Heart Association and Red Cross, as time goes on and this starts getting adopted more and more countrywide, my belief is that Red Cross and American Heart will eventually adopt that, and that will become their training protocol. Right now, I believe they're still on their standard protocols that they're on, but I believe the move is to try and get everybody over onto that process.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, hearing none. Thank you, Eric, very much. We'd like to go to some unfinished business, and this is the time that we go and have an update from our three ad hoc committees. Number one is the update from the Marine Services Facility Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee. Ron, do you have a report?
The harbor director is best able to provide us with a current report. It has to do with the mini. What's the phrase? Mini general plan. Mini
master plan.
Mini master plan.
Mini master plan, as it relates to what's known as the Triangle Lot on Embarcadero and associated grounds. So, Eric, if you could help with that, please.
Yeah, sure. So, the mini master plan, the MMP. As you know, council authorized us to go ahead and fund and do that. I'm working with RRM right now and hammering out the final details on the consulting agreement with that, and hope to have them engage here in the next week or two and get them going on the ground. They had, as you recall, they had a pretty short timeline. I think they said 2 weeks from start to finish on their process. They had a pretty quick and efficient way of getting at it, so We'll hopefully be seeing something that we'll bring to the, obviously bring to the Harbor Advisory Board and route it through the ad hoc committee and then to the Harbor Advisory Board. Likely November, if things go as planned, to the November meeting. I hate to bring up the word special meeting again. I had enough of those this year, but maybe if the timing's wrong, maybe we do a special meeting. But anyhow, I'm hoping to have that sometime in for November for the Harbor Advisory Board to have a look at it and then pass that on to the City Council and go from there.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Ron?
All right. Thank you very much, Eric. So basically what we're trying to do to update it is by the November meeting, you might have an update from RRM and some type of preliminary study.
Yeah, if their study or report isn't complete by the November meeting, I definitely would hope that we've got something substantial. And maybe, again, depending on how it goes with RRM, it may be that we bring in some preliminary stuff to the Harbor Advisory Board through the ad hoc committee.
In the November meeting.
Yeah,
okay.
To keep the process moving if there's some big decision or something that comes up that may warrant bringing it in front of the board, we could do that as well.
Well, we'll talk later on this month and see if that will happen. Thank you. Okay, the update from the Capital Improvement Planning Ad Hoc Committee. Now, what's the new term, Neil? Is that the right?
We are the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee.
Okay,
it was correctly labeled in the minutes. From
Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee.
Correct.
Do you have a update for us, Neil?
Yeah, I do have an update. I was out of the state during the last meeting that Bill and Ron attended with the city of Morro Bay Administrative Services Director, Susan Slayton, and the Harbor Director on September 21st. So this is a summary that I'll read here of the meeting that I was not able to attend. And it essentially covered the city's cost allocation plan, which is the CAP for short, as it relates to the Morro Bay Harbor Department. So the city's CAP, which is a tool used by the city to allocate city-related costs to its various departments and divisions, was last updated by an outside consultant in 2009 and then was published in 2010. At the outset of the meeting, the HAB Finance Committee explained to the Administrative Service Director that the committee was interested in understanding how the current cost allocation model is applied to the Harbor Department, i.e. the rationale of application. So given the many changes in the city's organizational structure since 2010, we wanted to know, are the current CAP line items for the Harbor Department appropriate, and what are the operational assumptions? We explained that the committee's purpose is to best support the Harbor Department's financial planning and budget process. The Administrative Services Director referred the committee to recommendation number 2 from the May 2015 Management Partners Report. And I'll read as quoted, "The current cost allocation plan, CAP, does not provide for all funds to contribute for all funds to contribute their fair did I read that right? Yeah, for all funds enterprise zone funds to contribute their fair share of administrative costs to the general fund providing these services. This makes it difficult to determine the actual cost of providing some services. A new CAP has the potential to increase revenues to the general fund. It may also reveal that other funds levy inadequate user fees to support the total cost of their services, which includes their share of overhead. If this is born out of the CAP study, then the fees imposed by these other funds may need to be increased so they make their full authorized contribution to the general fund. Recommendation number 2 reads, require all funds to pay a share of general fund costs such as accounting, investment, legal, and general administration. This recommendation applies to all funds, not just those funds that include labor costs. So the Administrative Service Director went on to say that recommendation number 2 was on the city's radar and that the likely best time for an update of the CAP would be in support of the city's development of its 2016/2017 fiscal year operating budget. By the ad hoc committee's best estimate, this would mean that if such a CAP update was executed by an outside consultant, the best time for that work and the publication of an updated CAP would be by spring of 2016. So for that to happen, the city council would need to allocate the funds, likely roughly $100,000, and hire a consultant no later than very early in 2016. And the meeting concluded with the participants agreeing that all the city's enterprise funds should pay their fair share and that the fair part needs to be accurate. And that's the summary that I have for now.
Thank you.
Do you guys have anything to add to that?
No, I think that Eric has a very good relationship with Susan, and they are working out some, I think, differences. We actually did find $3,900, which was about $4,000 that should not have been there. So in that respect, it was really worth just going to see Susan, and she immediately deleted that $4,000. It was actually an office for Susan when she had to work up at City Hall when she could no longer work at the Harbor Department. And as you know, she's not here, so that was, you know, continuing to move forward. So, you know, it's good that we have some oversight so that we understand it, and we are paying our fair share, or and as we've said, it could go either way. So Susan was very accommodating and helped us, and I think that we will continue to monitor what goes on and what we have to allocate our resources to the general fund. So I was pleased. Neil?
So in closing, our next, well, not in closing, but further on the report, our next action as an ad hoc committee would be to meet within our group and discuss our more short-term goals. Sorry, tongue-tied. Over the next few months that we're going to work on. So that's where we're at.
Thank you, Neil. Any other questions? Anyone? Ron, you have anything to add? Thank you. Gene?
Yeah. You know, I'm just going to bring up a little bit of history. The general fund is always trying to get money out of the Harbor Department. And you guys have to just, you know, hey, we're an enterprise fund. We're in the black. Let's just keep us that way. So, okay.
No. Thanks, Gene. Okay, so then we have the update from the Insurance Ad Hoc Committee. Lynn?
Well, I believe that we gave our final report at the meeting 2 months ago. And at that time, we gave some conclusions and asked if the board wanted us to pursue any other questions. And there were no questions suggested, so I think we were finished on that.
So I would like to entertain a motion. I don't know if this is what we need to do, but to disband the Ad Hoc Insurance Committee at this point in time. I think Lynn's and her committee has done a great job, has looked at risk and have come up with the conclusion, and I do concur, that we are covered in most cases that if anything did happen. So do we need a motion to, do I hear a motion to disbandon the insurance committee from anyone?
We have a motion to
correct. So we need a motion to abandon it.
I'll make a motion that we abandon the ad hoc committee for the insurance review.
Do I hear a second?
Okay,
I have a first and second. Any discussion? Ron?
As a member of that committee, it isn't so much, Lynn, I'd like you to speak to this too, please, as the chair, as the soon-to-be ex-chair. I don't think it was so much that the committee concluded that there's no risks to the city, or that the risks are covered, as just was characterized. The last activity, aside from reporting of that committee, was to sit with a Joint Powers Insurance Authority representative, that's where the city gets its insurance, and with city representatives to include the risk manager. And we went through the list of, we'd already provided them with, and then we went through the list of potential liability risks that the committee had developed. And one by one, we were told, mostly by the representatives of the JPIA, that those risks were essentially addressed by the city's existing coverage. Although I do think there were a couple of things that came up that they said that they would look into, but we were not, you know, invited, nor should we have been, to participate in the look-in. That's an internal matter for the city.
Lynn?
Yes, that you summarized it very well. We might add one more point that on as far as requiring insurance from vessel owners who are occupying city property, be they moorings or slips, that requiring that would probably not protect the city any more than it already is, since the vessels that are the problems are those that are derelict vessels. The owners have abandoned them, and they probably wouldn't either not be able to get insurance, nor would they want to pay for insurance. So the insurance, requiring insurance from vessel owners, would not give us any additional protection.
Well said. Okay. So, hearing no discussion here, I have a motion on the table and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Thank you very much, Lynn. Now, is this the time I was going to bring up something to create a couple more ad hoc committees that I have some thoughts on? Should I wait to new business or should I wait? Okay. New business? All right.
I think future agenda declaration.
Okay.
And I think.
Okay, then. Let's just continue to move forward then. And we have new business. And we have consideration of a slip sublease rate discount for qualified commercial fishing vessels on the commercial slip waiting list. This has been brought to our attention as actually one of our standing members here, Joe, is actually, I believe, on the list. So he feels it's unfair. Would you talk about it a little bit, Eric? And we need to talk about it and see what we think.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So about a year ago, September 14, 2014, future agenda item was declared to consider a slip discounted slip rate for qualified commercial fishermen that are on the waiting list. So as you know, we have several different slip rates. One is $465 per foot per month for folks that are permanently assigned our commercial slips, and then $8.35 per foot per month for transients. In other words, people that aren't on our permanent in a permanent slip, and that can be a recreational boat, passing through. That can be a commercial fisherman passing through. That can be a local commercial fisherman that's on the waiting list and just needs to get in a slip for a couple months. So it's anybody that's not the permanent slip holder who's on the transient rate. The sublease rate has historically been higher to recoup revenue lost when our permanent slip holders are on a vacancy rate, which is a 75% discount, or they pay their slip fees a year in advance, they get a 10% discount, and to account for additional administrative and other costs associated with subleasing and sublessees. So the net revenue out of subleasing versus the loss is a gain. There's a net gain there, but still there's that's the main difference why there's two different rates there. And then through our master fee schedule, as you know, that we went through earlier this year, we went through a pretty robust master fee schedule review. Our estimated 100% cost recovery rate for our slips is $5.48 per foot per month. So the discussion is, do folks that are on the permanent slip waiting list, which to do that, you've got to provide your fish tickets to show that you meet the qualification standards. You pay a deposit and you get on the list. Some boats have been there for decades, mainly because they're out-of-town boats, and they just got on there thinking that maybe someday they'd take a slip here. Many of those we've refunded their money just because they have no interest in being here. Some people want to stay on the list. Some of the bigger boats, for folks that want to slip, they end up on the list for a while because it takes a little while for turnover on those bigger slips. But for our smaller slips, yeah, I'd probably say maybe a year The 18 months is probably about our average wait time for folks to get on if they're in, you know, 36-foot slip or in that range. So generally we've got probably four or five boats on the list that would be considered out of poly. What is there, maybe eight or ten on there now? Four or five that are really true active players that would be interested in a slip. The others are, like I say, they're just kind of there because thought they maybe they'd get a slip someday. And then of those that are on the list right now, at least when I wrote the staff report, and I don't think it's changed, the folks that are on there right now, two of them are actively subleasing slips because they want to have a slip, so they're in there paying that higher rate. Kind of in short, while we acknowledge that a discount rate may be appropriate because we're here to try and help the commercial fleet and to support the industry, while there could be, if we do a different rate, there could be a slight revenue loss, which is unknown just because I don't know what the rate would be, although it's a relatively small number of boats. The two issues that we identified as staff, I think the board should address, is if the rate were the same as the regular commercial slip rate, it could potentially be a disincentive for vessel owners to ever get off the waiting list and take a slip and maybe use as a vehicle just to get a cheaper rate, and people get on the waiting list and never really intend to get a slip. Then when they want a sublease, they jump in and use that as a means to get a cheaper discount rate. The slip waiting, Paul, do you know the number now to get on the waiting list? It's, I want to say $435. About $435. I wish I would have written it. I don't apologize. So it's about 2 months of slip fees at the regular commercial slip rate. So it could be an incentive for folks to just use that to kind of bypass the regular transient fee. And we didn't think that was the intent of what the waiting list is for and what our slip discounted rate is for. And it wouldn't be in keeping with the policy of the city, we didn't feel. So that's one issue we identified in creating a second rate. Would require additional administrative staff time in tracking and billing those users. Again, I think that's the lesser of the two issues. It wouldn't be more than probably one or two at a time. But it is a different rate, and it's different billing entry. I wish our billing system was completely automated and we could wave a magic wand, but it still takes a fair amount of time for our staff to add things up and ensure that the right numbers are entered. So those are the two primary issues we identified. We wouldn't recommend, and mainly for the first reason, we wouldn't recommend that it be at the regular slip rate, and maybe something in between is more appropriate. So we'll leave it up to the board here to discuss and see if there's any other ideas out there, comments or concerns. And if the Harbor Advisory Board recommends a lower rate or a different rate, we'd bring it back to the city council in the springtime when it comes to start ramping up for the master fee schedule again, which is, even though it's October, that's not that far away at this point.
Well, thank you, Eric. One of the things that Mr. Buckingham alluded to and is really in favor of that concerns me here if we do make any additional changes is this 100% cost allocation. And one of the rationales that I think we used to keep the rates fairly low for the commercial fishermen was this subletting their slips and the $8 from the regular to kind of get a better 100% cost allocation. So I think if we change it, and this is just my opinion, at this point in time, when maybe it would be fair, but the fishermen also knew that these were the rates when they came on board, and it's not something that we're increasing or anything like that. So I kind of tend to think that I would like to tend to go with Eric's recommendation in the sense of the leave them the way they are right now. That's just my opinion. Neil?
I have a question, Eric. You said there was 10 on the list, and of that, two are currently subletting? So the other 10 are supposedly at the T pier?
Yeah, so, and again, I apologize, I didn't bring the list. There's about 10 boats on the waiting list. Two are currently subleasing, at least when I wrote the staff report a couple of weeks ago. Two are currently subleasing, and there's probably, of those 10, I'd say like maybe four or five that would, if a slip came up, one of those four or five would jump on one. The other four or five or six probably are boats from farther away that still want to stay in the list but really don't have intention of taking a slip.
But they currently have another option. There's two options. You can either pay more and be in a slip or stay on the T-pier.
Yeah, T-pier. Some of those boats, not knowing exactly which those two boats are, they also have the option of other facilities in town as well. It's T-piers. T-pier is typically where most folks go.
Gene, you have anything? Your thoughts on this?
So, if you're on the slip waiting list, and there's sometimes it's somewhere between a year or a year and a half before they can get into another slip permanently. Is that correct?
It can be, or sometimes longer for the bigger slips. You know,
so this reduction of a rate would be for somebody for just a year to 2 years.
And if, let's say, somebody is on the list and they're actively fishing, it's highly unlikely that that boat would be in a sublease for that entire year, year and a half, because our permanent slip holders, you know, do come home and are in.
Right.
If people really want to stay in, we are able to juggle them around and move them around and accommodate them, but it's not a 100% guarantee you'd get that whole time.
Okay.
Tom, your thoughts on this?
Well, I know there's going to be some juggling around here pretty soon on the old Susan Diane, because that boat should be leaving. And so that, I think South Bays might be at the top of the list next, or right, like that.
That sounds right. I'm not sure.
So, but
Diane's
so
giving that slip up, even though she's selling the boat. I think she's
right, but
that's
it. It might go away. So that would probably be the next slip that is available if she doesn't want it anymore. So that means we're going to have to juggle some boats around for the South Bay to get into a big slip, because he's going to need a bigger slip.
A big slip.
But the only problem with that is when the dredge comes to town, he wouldn't be able to be in that slip. He'd have to go to maybe the end tie. And so the boats, like the Nadine and me and might have to move, and Alan too, to get him on the end tie. But Alan's big too, so we were talking about this the other day about Bill Blue, Nadine, and the Catherine H juggling some slips around so the South Bay could get that end slip where Bill is now.
Yeah, so if the Susan Diane slip does become available, you know, typically we just assign that slip to the next person on the list. So we do keep a running list of requests when people want to move. Some people we have juggled around where this opening comes up and one of our existing guys wants to move over. We will do our best to try and accommodate that, as long as we're not, now this person moving over here and the slip he vacates, the guy that's on the list, now he can't take that slip that got vacated because it doesn't fit. We try to avoid that, but... And we have had occasion, like you say, Tom, fishermen kind of working amongst themselves and deciding, okay, if I go here, you go there. And if you guys do that, we have no problem with that. So,
right.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
So that's one way to look at that, I guess. And about Joe's comment about him being a commercial fisherman and fishing on a Morro Bay and paying the high rate, when he sublets a slip when somebody's gone, I don't know what to say about that, because it's like he's, like people rent him for a couple of months and then boats come back and they have to get out and they have to go somewhere else. So it's kind of a hard thing to do, you know. You can't just give the, if a guy was to come out of town and he's a commercial fisherman and he wants to sublease a slip that's open, I don't know. It's going to cost him more money.
So your question is that, do you feel that there is some justification to lower those rates, or should we leave them as is? Or, you know, I mean, especially with what's going on with the fees and stuff like that, that we start messing around with this stuff. You know, we already went through this. I just hate to revisit this, I guess, is my term.
Yeah, I think that maybe we need to have a ad hoc committee about this. Because there's a lot of variables there that's going on. You know, maybe if the guy lives here and he needs a slip real bad, and maybe that rate could be cut a little bit. But I think it would take a few of us to get together and decide on something like that and look at that a little bit better, you know.
So maybe you, as a commercial fishing organization, maybe could take a look at that and kind of give a recommendation to us as a guide, and we can maybe table this for.
Yeah, I could get together with Eric and talk about this, and
you know.
And
or do you want to have the finance and budget ad hoc committee have a look at it, which is something to not talk about tonight, but as we go into budget season, it's not that far around the corner, and like we did last year, mostly with capital, but you know, master fee, working through an ad hoc committee rather than what we did last year. We just did master fee staff and then brought it to the Harbor Advisory Board a couple different times. The ad hoc committee really didn't dive deeply into the master fee, and maybe the ad hoc committee.
That's
could
a good
have
point.
A role there.
Okay, Gene.
Because this is going to happen at master fee schedule anytime.
Right.
Time.
I don't want to complicate the issue, but does it make any difference whether it's big boats, little boats, or little boats changing more often than big boats? Or
there tends to be more turnover in the smaller boat slips, the ones down at the launch ramp. If you're a boat that size, you got a better chance of being on the list less than a year there. But it's highly variable. The bigger boat slips, like the end ties at Allen's Inn, and those are the not very long turnover ones, but it just depends on who's around and who's retiring and leaving and doing whatever.
Ron, do you have anything? Oh, I'm sorry. Neil? Oh, Lynn? Lynn?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. One, do I understand right that in order to get on the waiting list for a slip, the commercial fisherman has to pay a deposit? And that deposit is $400+?
Yeah, it's a.
Is it refundable?
It goes towards your slip fees. It is refundable. If you want to get off the list, it's fully refundable.
Or it goes towards your slip fees.
Or if you end up getting a slip, it goes towards your slip fees. It's about 2 months, depending on the size. The bigger slips, obviously, a little less, but it's about 2 months worth of slip fees when it goes towards your fees.
And there is no distinction made between a local fisherman and an out of towner.
No, like I said, we've had. And I think most of those we scrubbed off just because we finally got a hold of those folks. We had a guy that was on number one on there forever. And I remember when I first started in the mid-90s, I called down in San Diego. I must have called him a dozen times, you know, because he's number one on the list. And he finally just said, you know, give me a deposit back. I'll get off the list. I don't need this. So most of the boats are somewhat active, but no, there's no difference between large and small.
So the question. And what Tom seems to be saying is that we should treat the local fishermen differently than we treat out-of-towners.
Did I say that?
No. I understood you to say that, since you said if the guy is here and really needs a slip, then maybe there would be some justification for reducing his slip fees.
Well, I do think a guy that is a local fisherman and lands his fish here in Morro Bay versus a guy that just comes in and catches crab or catches a black cod and goes away and doesn't unload here and isn't really here. I mean, I think he should maybe pay a higher rate than the local guy.
Okay. You're okay saying that. You're okay having that opinion.
That's my opinion.
In part, the purpose is to benefit the local fishing community.
Right.
All right, so then you are suggesting or consideration. How many of these boats on the list are out-of-towners?
I knew that question was coming next.
Well, then why don't you have an answer?
I didn't bring the list.
My question is this really a problem, or is this something that is perceived and isn't real?
Well, it's for a local guy that gets on the list and he wants to sublease, he's paying a higher rate.
Okay.
He's paying the same rate as some guy that's coming from Monterey for a passing through, or some guy that's coming to Monterey to fish for 3 weeks or whatever. He's paying the higher rate. Probably half the boats are from out of town on the list. Of the active ones, or the ones I'd call, you know, players that would be taking a slip, I'm probably going to hazard a guess to say almost all of those, if not all of those currently on the list, are probably what I would call local boats. You know, if the ones that are the out-of-towners that are just on there because maybe someday they want to move here, they're the ones that we really don't call anymore because they've just got a standing order. Hey, don't call me. I'll call you when I think I'm interested. So it's really the bottom of the list that we work off of, because the top of the list are the guys that have the seniority, but those are the guys that, if they're still interested, they're really not interested in coming here.
Okay.
So most of them are going to be local boats on that list.
Gene?
I'm sorry,
Glenn.
I'm not finished. Oh. And we're really only talking about one or two vessels each month that are subletting slips. And those are probably when the fishermen are gone out fishing, so that doesn't even last year-round. We're talking about two vessels for a period of 4 to 6 months in a year. Reducing the rate.
Yeah, on average, it's probably more over the year than that, because those two that are on there now, maybe two different ones later, but... And some of them may try and stay longer. But, yeah, it's hard to just generalize it like that. It's not a huge amount of boats. Sometimes none of the boats that are on the waiting list are subleasing.
Uh-huh. Okay, so this problem is very small.
It's not a multiple $10,000 problem if you crunch the numbers on it, no.
So then we're really trying to decide, is should we give this benefit to $3 or $4 per month to two vessels over a 6 month period of time? The numbers are very small. Maybe it's not worth the time to consider it. Even though, of course, it does affect those two fishermen in a significant way.
Yeah, and again, my concern, and I'll reiterate from the staff report, is yes, it's not a problem now. Will we create a problem of the sublease list being used as a vehicle to bypass the transient rate? I don't know that. That's just a concern we mm-hmm. have, and there's no way of knowing until you do it.
Okay.
You know, I go back to my same sentiment. If my memory serves me correct, some of the justifications on the lower rate for the fishermen was based on it really isn't this figure. It's because it's being sublet, that if we mess around with this and start saying local or non-local and they really want to slip, I think we're opening up a can of worms. To be honest with you, and I agree with Lynn. Yes, it does impact a couple people, but they also—it's not something that we're raising, and it's not something that we're, telling. They knew this when they came in, so I don't think it is a problem, and I think it should be left alone. Neil.
So, we have plenty of time tonight. I think we could come up with a recommendation tonight. Our ad hoc committee, I think, could obviously take it on if it's needed, but You know, we've also all spent hours in here going over the cost studies and trying to get to 100% cost recovery. And I think that if you look at the $8.35, as I recall, and Eric, if I'm wrong, please tell me that in compared to other harbors, if we're talking about visiting boats, that that still is not a high rate compared to other harbors surrounding us, i.e. Monterey, San Francisco, Ventura, Santa Barbara. So as far as fairness goes across the state, yeah, it's fair. In the harbor, no, but the guys who have slips have paid their dues, and now they have the discount. And I think having that differential increases the incentive, and so we benefit by having 100% occupancy in all the slips. So I don't think I'm in favor of a change to the current way it is. As it reads, we have 100% cost recovery, and that's due to the differential that allows for us to make up the discount for the current fishermen, basically benefit from that difference in the sublet. So I still see this as benefiting the commercial fishermen. That's me.
Ron.
From the perspective of the city of Morro Bay's current resolved goals and objectives, one could argue that this isn't a legitimate issue. It has to do with economic development. Everybody that's here tonight, and many people who are not here tonight, have ongoing concerns about the future of the commercial fishing fleet in Morro Bay. We had a fisherman tell us quite recently, one of our own, tell us that for him, and I can't recall, and I apologize to Joe ahead of time, but I think Joe said something about a couple $100 a month. I think that's what he said. Was significant to him. He's trying to get rolling. So I think there's some legitimacy to the question, and I also am disturbed, I think is the right word, as opposed to concerned. I'm disturbed by the fact that there is a commercial fishing vessel waiting list which has existed for a long time that doesn't seem to have any criteria in particular. I could be wrong about that, and I would be pleased to be corrected by the harbor director. But let's say currently relevant criteria. For instance, Tom this evening said something that really got my attention. Does a boat land fish in Morro Bay? There's a big difference between a boat that lands fish in Morro Bay and one that and a fishing vessel that does not and is here and is using resources. Yes, paying a rate, but it's paying a reduced rate. And as a matter of fact, as we know, it's less than 100% cost recovery rate. I don't know how many those are. So one of the things that bothers me tonight about this topic is that we don't have very good data. We don't know what the actual, in terms of the commercial fishing vessel waiting list, we don't really have good data about how long people have been on lists from, with what kind of a boat, what size of a boat, where the vessel is home ported. You know, we don't know some things. So I'm not ready to dismiss this tonight, personally. And if I was pressed to make a recommendation, I would be thinking somewhere along the lines of, okay, a qualified commercial fishing vessel that is on the city's commercial fishing vessel slip waiting list, I would be willing to consider giving them some consideration in terms of the sublet fee rate, something greater than cost recovery, than 100% cost, than the estimated cost recovery, but perhaps not the full boat rate. Is it a lot of money? Well, the delta between the two, in point of fact, is $3.70, so it depends on the size of the boat. And one could say, well, that's not a lot of money. Well, Maybe it is, you know. Maybe it's a new long line for the guy. Maybe it's a, you know, a couple of new pots. I mean, maybe it's an engine part that if he doesn't get, he's not going out. So those are my feelings.
Thank you, Ron. So any other comments? So do I hear a recommendation, or do I have a call to recommend something, or does this need to be tabled, or what does you folks want to do? Tom, do you have a motion?
Well, I think we should look at this a little further and possibly come up with a plan for the local fisherman that is waiting for a slip that's on the list. If he has a chance to sublet a slip that's open for a while, maybe we could cut his rate a little bit, or, you know, a couple of dollars to a boat that comes to town to sublet a slip that isn't on the list and is a commercial fisherman, and he's just here for a couple of months to fish. I think it would be fair, the guy that lives here in Morro Bay and is waiting for a slip, to cut his rate a little bit to help him, you know, to help him out. Not pay that full $8-something a foot.
$8.35
a foot. I don't think there's that many guys that are on that list that would need that, but I mean, every little bit helps, like Ron says.
Yeah, Lynn?
When you say a local fisherman, is that somebody who lands fish here, or is it somebody who lives here or lives in the county? Or do all of the local fishermen sell their fish here? I don't.
No.
Think so. They
no.
sell it in other ports as well.
Right. But I think if you are if you live in the county of San Luis Obispo and you're a commercial fisherman and you're running out of Morro Bay and landing or not, I mean, I don't know. It's a hard area to go there, you know. There's a lot of variables.
So, Ron, when you brought up the fact that the local guy is landing his fish here and therefore makes a larger contribution to our economic activity than an out-of-towner, it's because he lands fish here, not just as well as because he lives here.
Correct.
So both of those things would have to be true in order to justify a lower rate or not. That's a question, not a statement. Should both of those things be true in order to justify a lower rate? I don't know.
Well, it's a good question. And
or am I nitpicking?
No. I mean, I think what we're doing here is that we're picking a couple people. Ron, you have a very valid point. I mean, if I was on the list and $2 to $3. Would make a difference. Yeah, and I get that. I think the point being, though, as we've gone through some of the justifications of leaving the existing commercial fishing rates low, was that we could lease it out at $8.35. I mean, that was the rationale why we were keeping that lower, and I'd hate to mess with that formula. Second of all, is that we're not really raising any rates, and it is below market value from some of the other ports. So I I'm not so sure that I really want to delve into reducing anything at this point in time.
Okay.
This discussion, which I think is a good discussion, and perhaps even a necessary one. One of the things that it has brought to light that isn't directly related to the agenda item is the nature of the City of Morro Bay's commercial fishing vessel waiting list.
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, if we, you know, we look at the criterias, and if we really kind of weeded out the people that supposedly have a slip, and are they really a commercial fisherman? I mean, if we really want to look into all this stuff and we can actually get people that want to get into it, it opens up the can of worms. If that's something that maybe we should do as a committee.
Well, one of the possibilities is if there are a set of current updated criteria set, it could accelerate it could shorten the waiting time for a local fisherman, for instance, to get a slip, and that's another kind of benefit in addition to the possibility of a lower some kind of lower fee, whatever that might be. So I'm at the moment actually more focused on that, although I'm not dismissing the possibility of trying to help somebody that needs the help, wants to be a local fisherman, wants to land fish here, and $2 to $3 a foot per month of boat length might make a difference to them.
Yeah.
So I think that speaks to, you know, Lynn, what you were bringing up. Those were essentially, you were coming up with criteria for what makes you local. And we're talking about criteria. Eric, do you have any kind of information you can offer us now with the current criteria on the list?
Well, as you know, a year and a half or so ago, we grappled with the commercial fishing qualification criteria, and it's pretty basic. To address some of the concerns on being data poor and how do you determine who's what, it really, if it could turn into quite a convoluted rabbit hole of different things depending on what we want to try and look at and whether local, not local, how long you're here, how long you're not here. The commercial fishing stipulation to get on our waiting list and maintain a slip, as you know, is based solely on, I mean, having obviously current commercial fishing licenses and permits and that sort of thing, but landing receipts from the West Coast. I mean, California Fish and Game mostly, but West Coast landing receipts. We modified it a year and a half, 2 years ago, because it was $1,000 per net ton in the smaller boats. It seemed to be in boats that have oddball documentation numbers where their net tonnage is unnaturally high. It penalized them, so we went for, I want to say 26 or 27 feet. It's a flat 5,000, and above that is 10,000 to just try and simplify it. And we did that as a Harbor Advisory Board. That's it. We don't differentiate between whether you're from Eureka or Morro Bay or San Diego. As far as landings go, I'll use Jeremiah as a case in point. He's pretty much exclusively fishes albacore these days, although if there's salmon out front, he'll fish them. He doesn't, other than bring him a boatload of albacore home at the end of the trip and selling them off the boat, he doesn't land a single albacore in this county. It's all up in Washington and Owaco, and most of the albacore guys are that way because that's where the albacore's landed. There's no canneries here anymore to do it. You can't do volumes of albacore here. So if you're doing it on where the landings are, that becomes punitive to guys that don't land here. Same with crab. You know, we've had a few good crab years, but Dungeness is mainly up in the city. Salmon, the same thing. We occasionally have a good salmon year, but salmon are usually more north. So Tom's point about probably San Luis Obispo County, you're a San Luis Obispo County resident. The only, I'm thinking to the Anchor Memorial statue at Anchor Park, where a criteria was set forth, you know, what's the local Morro Bay fisherman, how do you get on that memorial? It's basically a San Luis Obispo County resident or somebody that perished in local waters. And so that's really the only local kind of thing we can apply to it. In terms of trying to think back, boats we've had in our slips that weren't really San Luis Obispo County-based boats, and if we've got any now, and I'm going to wait for see if Polly whispers anything in my ear, but there's a boat I'm thinking of now. He was a Santa Barbara guy. He kept the slip for a good number of years, was only up here maybe 1 or 2 months out of the year at most, and finally just gave up on it because he just wasn't using it. I don't know that we got, we have a lot of, or have had a lot of out-of-town boats that have taken a slip here and not been residents here. Tom, you think of anybody in our slips right now?
No, not that it's taken slips, no. Tied to the tee pair, yes.
Randy Harmson in the Palm is the one I'm thinking of, that he was out of town, never was a resident of San Luis County. You know, I think once somebody becomes one of the players on the list, even though they've been on the list for a long time, and they want a slip, it's because they're relocating to this county to operate out of here. And we have had a couple of those that have moved. I don't know if that answers your questions or not, Neil.
So, Ron,
do you have any other questions?
I do. Relative to the city's commercial fishing vessel waiting list, and thank you for reminding me that the Harbor Advisory Board did review and recommend to the city updated qualifications for the definition of a commercial fishing vessel. Are those qualifications applied on an annual basis to the commercial fishing vessel waiting list?
I'm pausing for a second to answer that. No, they are. Well, no, they're. To get on the list, when you take a slip, you've got to. If you've been on there for a short period of time, your tickets are still good. Within that year, you're fine. If you've sat on the list for 2, 3, 4 years, you've got to produce new tickets to get the slip at the time you get the slip.
But not while you're on the list. You
Correct.
Do not have to requalify as a City of Morro Bay recognized commercial fisherman while you're sitting on the list.
Correct. We don't get fish tickets from everybody on the waiting list to make sure they can stay on the waiting list.
That Harbor Advisory Board definitely gets my attention.
Lynn?
Well, obviously, if you're going to give a reduced rate, they would have to qualify by presenting fish tickets, and I would think.
Yeah, but what we're talking about, according to the Harbor Department, there are vessels that have been on the list for a prolonged period of time, and the list, in a sense, is sort of frozen in time. And what I'm addressing is whether there is a completely legitimate way to make sure that the folks that are on that list currently qualify under the City of Morro Bay's commercial fishing vessel qualification criteria.
So you want them to qualify to be on the list, not simply to qualify when they get a slip?
That's correct. They have to qualify to get on the list.
To stay on
they
the
have
list.
To qualify on an annual basis to stay on the list, and they have to qualify to get a slip.
Okay.
If I may ask a question of staff, then how difficult or what is the procedure? How much staff time does it take to ascertain the qualifications of the people on the list? I mean, obviously you do it for every slip holder, and I assume that they turn in their fish tickets every year. So you would simply add to the slip holders the 5 or 10 who are on the list as you're reviewing the fish tickets.
Yes, every year, December, January, sometimes for people who don't get them in time, or they're out, you know, a lot of our crab guys are out of town. It takes a little more time for them to get them in. Yeah, the end of the year, we and some boats are one-ticket boats. They give it to us on one ticket, and we're done. Some of them are a stack, half an inch tall, because they're all little bits and pieces at a time. But, yeah, we verify those every year for our 50-ish slips.
So if you only required qualification once they got a slip at a reduced rate, then there's a little more staff work involved there. But to stay on the list to require qualification, they're not really getting any benefit. They're just on the list.
They are potentially, if they're not qualified, and I'm not saying that everybody on the list isn't qualified, but they are potentially impeding a qualified fisherman from moving up the list.
If a slip comes available, I would see that the Harbor Department starts at the top and says, okay, Joe Blow, we have a slip for you. Bring in your fish tickets in order to ascertain your qualification, and you can have the slip. And if he doesn't have the fish tickets, then that's the end of that conversation, and you go to number two and down to number three. So it's an sort of an automatic winnowing process once the slip becomes available. I'm not sure that I see any great purpose in requiring fish tickets in order to stay on the list for something that may happen at some time in the future. That's all.
Gene, you had a question or a comment?
My question is just how burdensome it is to look at the fish tickets. Is there just one, or is there, you know, 100 of them or 500 of them? And you guys answered that question.
Yeah, okay. I would like to call to order that this discussion be tabled. I don't think we're going to come to any conclusion today unless someone wants to have a motion to make a recommendation. Do I hear anyone here that wants to make a motion? No? So we would like to table. Okay. Tom?
I motion we should table it.
Okay. And so I think we should table it. That's the motion on the table. Do I hear a second? I'll second that. So I have a motion to table this discussion. I have a second. Do I hear any discussion? Okay. So, Lynn?
I just wonder why we can't complete this discussion this evening.
Well, there is some, I think. Well, I mean, let's continue this right here. So all in favor of tabling this?
May I jump in?
Yes.
Before you, because we're going to table it, we're done. If we're going to bring it back, I would like to ask of Ron and maybe Tom or anybody else what sort of additional data you would like. Because we're kind of looking at it in two different ways. We're looking at it in concept. Okay, there's the concept of providing a discount to these folks on this list versus, okay, I want the data-driven part, and I want to know how much it is and what's it going to mean and how many and this and that and the stuff Ron was referring to. I'd like to know, if we're going to bring it back, what sort of things we're interested in bringing back, what you're looking for to help make your decision next time around.
Right. Well, let's see what we have here in the way of see what the board wants to do here. So I have a motion on the table. I have a second. I don't hear any discussion.
I have discussion.
You have discussion?
If the maker of the motion and was willing to withdraw the tabling motion, an alternative motion could be, does the Harbor Advisory Board, or does it not, want to consider a discount for slip sublease rate holders? And if the answer, and if a major, and if the Harbor Advisory Board says, no, we don't want to consider that, a majority, then we're done. And if a majority says, yes, we do want to consider it, then that leads us down the path that Eric just commented on.
Tom? Or do you want to leave, you want to consider that, or do you want to leave your motion as is? Then we would basically come to a head, and we either vote not to deal with any changes, or we will deal with some changes and maybe come back and talk about it. So we can actually have a yes or no, and it'll be either final, or we'll discuss it some more.
If I take my motion off the table and consider Ron's motion, then we could...
We'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it. And I...
We'll make a decision on whether or not to not deal with it, and that it's going to be as is, or we will talk about tabling it and coming back to discuss it. I mean, either or.
Okay, well, I think we should go with Ron's motion. I think we should talk about it a little bit more.
Okay. So we have rescinded the motion of tabling this to a later date, to having the board here make a decision on what...
If Tom's going to withdraw his motion, then there needs to be another motion.
Well, I was under the impression that he was going to take your motion, but then...
No, I didn't make a motion.
Okay.
I made a set of comments.
Okay.
Well, I'm prepared to make a motion.
Okay. Ron, would you like to make a motion?
Sure.
Wait a minute. You have to agree as a second.
Yeah, we need to get Tom to withdraw his motion, and then, Bill, you withdraw your second.
Okay, I will withdraw my second. And so we do not have a motion.
And I'll withdraw my motion.
Okay. Okay, Ron.
Okay, so I move that the Harbor Advisory Board continue this item to the next regular meeting, and during that period of time that its members submit to the chair any questions that the member has for data from the Harbor Department. And that data be included in an updated staff report. That's my motion. And if it's voted down, then we're done with this.
Comment. Would that motion include a reduction in the rate?
That's the topic. Yes, Gene.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll second that motion.
Yes.
So I have a motion on the table, and I have a second. Could you repeat the motion again, Ron?
Sure.
For my clarification.
Sure. That the Harbor Advisory Board continue the consideration of a slip sublease rate discount for qualified commercial fishing vessels on the commercial slip waiting list until the next regular meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board. And in the interim, that if members of the board have data that they would like to get from the Harbor Advisory Board, from the Harbor Department, that they request that through the chair. And if that data is forthcoming, and I'm sorry this is so long, Polly, and that if that data is forthcoming, that it would be included in the staff report for the next time that this agenda item is considered.
Okay, thank you. And then I have a second on that. Any discussion on this? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. We have a 5-1. Thank you. So, concluding the new business, thank you. The declaration of future agenda items. The two items that I have to discuss that I would like to and get some consensus here from the board is, you know, as much as I, well, I mean, actually, I think ad hoc committees are good because of the fact that we can do some work and bring it back to the board here, and I think it's a good way of doing that. I feel that we should basically try to have two ad hoc committees, one being the eelgrass situation that's in the bay right now and how it's impacting the infrastructure to the facilities on the bay, i.e. pilings, slips, just structures. And it's something that is being dealt with right now with current projects and with projects that are coming forth. I don't know how true some of the comments that I've heard. I mean, they're not facts to me yet, but I think that we as the Harbor Board should take it upon ourselves to learn a little bit about it, to try to see if we can create maybe an eelgrass bank or at least have some information so that when people do come and have projects, they have some, you know, they have some knowledge and they're not just basically being denied their projects because of the eelgrass situation. And then two, I think that really there should be an ad hoc committee, and maybe it will be a moot point on October 5th, but on the Marine on the Shumash Marine Sanctuary proposal. So that's my thoughts. Any discussion on those two topics, or would anyone like to talk about that? Ron?
Thank you. Insofar as the eelgrass topic is concerned, we have on the declared future agenda items an eelgrass-related line item that states, quote, eelgrass mitigation co-op by city, end quote. What I would suggest is that we substitute for that wording that the Harbor Advisory Board conduct a study of potential eelgrass federal and state impacts, regulatory impacts on harbor maintenance and harbor economic development. And then insofar as the sanctuary thing is concerned, I like that idea, Bill. That's a great idea. I would respectfully suggest that it not be limited to any particular named application, that rather the Harbor Advisory Board educate itself and hence the city regarding the Marine Sanctuary Act and what impacts a federally regulated marine sanctuary off the coast of Morro Bay might have on Morro Bay. I'm pretty clear about what the environmental advantages are potentially, but I am not at all clear, and I'm very concerned about the possible economic impacts, and I see them as, at the moment, based on what I know, which is not sufficient, as being more negative than positive. The city is very focused on economic development, and some of that money could come onshore, and some of that money already exists in the uplands, i.e. agriculture. One of the things that the marine sanctuary proponents don't seem to want to talk about very much is that marine sanctuaries can have a pretty profound impact on agriculture.
Thank you, Ron. So do I have a show of Gene?
Are these future agenda items, or are we establishing ad hoc committees now?
I think that we should, you know, look at, my thought is establishing ad hoc committees now and proceeding to gather information and educate ourselves so that, that we then can, the ad hoc committee can educate the Harbor Advisory Board and i.e. the City Council.
So I'm going to jump in this, Gene. Are you going there? We're declaring future agenda items. These are items we want to consider. We can't take action on it. It's not an agendized item. Can't start creating ad hoc committees out of the blue. We need to future agendize it,
get support for it. It sounds like we're going to have support for both of these, and maybe with the eelgrass, I could bring back next time some more information on efforts that we're in the very infancy stages of embarking upon on that mitigation and the overall how to look at eelgrass in the bay that would help inform that ad hoc committee and kick it off. And then with the sanctuary as well, we're as I reported, the city council wanted to bring back NOAA, N-O-A-A, in a forum of some sort. That's probably going to happen in November, December. Nothing's going to happen before NOAA makes a decision on the Chumash proposal. That's just going to happen. That's, the timeline's gone. So we're going to be bringing back in November, December that forum with NOAA, N-O-A-A. And if we future agendize this and whether you want to make it broader or more specific, take action on the November meeting and create that ad hoc committee and give it a purpose, and we can bring back some information, maybe have a little bit more on what this forum may look like, that I can see that ad hoc committee helping inform that process. So
basically what you're saying is that you're going to bring back two agenda items in November meeting, i.e. the Marine Sanctuary. You also give us the what NOAA decided on October 5th. So if they happen to decide that the Chumash Marine Sanctuary is not a valid proposal, it's a moot point. But maybe not. I mean,
correct. So unless we've got other future agenda items that folks want to come up
right.
with.
Right. And then
if you get support for these two, we'll bring back some more information.
Okay. So do I have any support for the Marine Sanctuary?
I thought we can't take action. We need to put it as a future agenda
item.
You basically need consensus support
for the
make it a future agenda item.
Yeah.
If everybody says, no, I don't want to do that, Bill, okay. Sorry, bad idea.
All right. Well, so I'd like to see if there's any support to to have the Marine Sanctuary proposal coming back in the next meeting. Is there anyone that wants to support that?
I don't want to spend any more time on a proposal because there is no proposal that I'm aware of. What I'm happy to do is participate in educating myself and the Harbor Advisory Board becoming more educated, and hence the city becoming more educated, and I appreciate that that's the work underway regarding marine sanctuaries. A hypothetical marine sanctuary off the coast of Morro Bay. I don't care whose name is on it.
Okay. So, I'm a little at loss, and I do apologize in regards to. So you don't want to see this on a future agenda items. I don't see any support for that. So therefore, I don't think we can create an ad hoc committee.
That isn't what I said, Bill. All we would have to do is agree that it is not, that the activity isn't targeted on a particular named proposal. That's all we would have to do. If you think that the topic or the issue of a marine sanctuary existing off the coast of Morro Bay is an important issue, and I think you do, then
okay, I understand.
It doesn't need to be any more specific than
okay.
that.
Okay, and I understand. I mean, we have now wind energy. We have a lot of things that are happening, and we maybe need to educate ourselves. So
a good vehicle to help inform the council.
Right. So
as this process moves forward.
Right. So do I have a second to have Eric come back at a future agenda meeting on a marine sanctuary, the impact that we'll have for Morro Bay?
With respect, Mr. Chairman, we declare our future agenda items.
Well, I understand, but I need a second to...
No, I understand, but it doesn't need to involve the Harbor Director. I mean, we are in control of our future agenda items, so I am in full support of declaring a future agenda item that focuses on the formulation of an ad hoc committee to address a marine sanctuary off the educating ourselves about a marine sanctuary off the coast of Morro Bay. I mean, I look forward to that. As a matter of fact, I would volunteer for that if the time came, because I'm extremely interested in the part of the act that addresses marine sanctuaries and fishing regulations.
And so let's assume we get support, consensus. We bring this back as a staff report with whatever information we need, working, you know, through the chair to get in that staff report. Then when we do this in November, consideration of establishment of an ad hoc committee for sanctuaries, at that point you can really get down in the weeds and discuss, okay, what does this ad hoc committee want to do? Well, we want to look at A, B, C, D, and E. We don't want to focus it on Chumash. We want to look at this and do this, that, and the other thing. And I can bring back, you know, options and other ideas that we would bring to the table and what we think the city council needs.
Okay, so I have the motion. I have a second. Do I have to have any other?
This doesn't require a motion.
Well,
we just need
agenda.
To do
I'm sorry,
the
agenda. Okay, that's it.
One,
two.
And
okay.
I'll be another one.
It's on the agenda.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Next, do I have any support for the eelgrass study? Okay. That also needs to be put on the future agenda items. Okay. All right. Any other future agenda items that anyone would like to see? Gene?
Kind of a question. Is a staff report an agenda item? It is. And so on it, I'd kind of like to have more information, whatever you get, on the wind energy proposals. Whenever they come through you guys, I'd like to hear as much as we can about it.
And that I would put on, at least I hope I would put on the status report. I'll make a note of that. I mean, any that kind of stuff that comes up. The Coast Guard building is a little different because we've got that as a future agenda item. And if something were to come of that, I could make a staff report out of that since we've got future agenda. But things like that, the wave energy, all those, I would put that in a status report if something significant came along. But make a note of that.
Do I have any other future agenda items that anyone would like to see put on the list? Tom?
To get back to the wind energy thing, the commercial fishermen have had a meeting with them, and they want to schedule another one the 5th and 6th of this month. We haven't decided what day yet, so I'll know a little bit about what's going on there, too.
Thank you, Tom. Lynn, anything? Neil?
To go along with the eelgrass support that we've already agreed to, there was a meeting in which a presentation was delivered by, I believe, members of the National Fishery Program. I wasn't able to attend. I know some board members were, and I don't know if you guys would also think that an invitation to that group to possibly present information at the time of the eelgrass discussion of an ad hoc might also steer the direction our ad hoc goes.
Well, there's no question that I think that they play a pivotal role in what is happening. We have reached out to the director. As of today, we have not gotten a response.
Okay.
So maybe Eric.
So as part of that future agenda on eelgrass, I know every year we've generally had Adrian Harris from the NEP come in and just do a generalized eelgrass update and what the status is and what they're doing. I forgot when we did that last. I don't know if anybody remembers, but it's been a while. Do we want to wrap that in to this item and to kick off this ad hoc committee?
Don't we have to have the ad hoc committee first? I guess we don't. We can put her on the agenda. But
we can put that on the agenda for next time if you want to declare, because I don't see it on the future agenda list. I think when we had it last time, we crossed it off. If you want to declare it as a future agenda item now to bring the NEP back, we'll do it at the same meeting with the as considering an ad hoc committee for eelgrass. That way it can kind of inform the ad hoc committee when it kicks off at the same time.
My only intention with that was just to kind of steer the scope, whether we focus here or here, both areas. I don't know if it would become helpful or just for educational.
Well, no, I think for the members that didn't go, I think it would be very educational, and I think it would be worthwhile. So I would second that to be put on the future agenda items. Neil. Ron, you have anything else?
I'd like to relabel an existing
declared item, which is the status of the Bayside Cafe, and I'd like to relabel it as status of State Park Marina and city's involvement.
I'll second that.
And then whenever you're done, Mr. Chair, with future agenda items, I'd like to make a motion.
Okay. Any other future agenda items? Yes, Ron.
I'd like to move that the Harbor Advisory Board schedule a special meeting for the purpose of developing a strategic plan for the board. What does the board want to look at? And this isn't part of the motion. This is discussion. What does the board want to do in the future? What is important to it? What are its priorities? And this isn't an original thought from me. This comes out of the meeting that we had with the City Council. There was some good input from the City Council during that meeting. So my motion is to schedule a special meeting for the Harbor Advisory Board for the purpose of establishing a current strategic plan.
I'll second that.
Are you asking for a special meeting, special Harbor Advisory Board meeting?
So I will second that. And so we have a motion on the table, and I have a second. Do I hear any discussion? Gene?
Is there any possibility just to make this part of our regular meeting, or you need to have it a special meeting?
Gene, I see it as more of a workshop. I envision in my mind that there is a discussion agenda for it, that there are some targets, some generic targets that are identified to try to accomplish during the workshop to develop. Let's just say, for instance, for the next year.
So it's an open meeting, but it's really a workshop among us discussing this.
Well, the only way we can talk about it tonight and schedule it is if we declare it as a special meeting. So
yeah,
by definition, it would be a public meeting.
Yeah.
Sure.
A special meeting or a future agenda item just goes on the...
Say it again, please.
If it could be part of the regular meeting.
Well, I'd love to have it happen before, sooner than later. I'd love to have it during the month of October.
Now, a point of clarification, I mean, and I foresee this as more of a workshop that we sit around and just talk about goals and objectives. Is that something that we can do without, or does it have to be an open meeting because of the Brown Act? Okay. I think it's worthwhile. I know that we've had two special meetings, and we all value our time, but one of the things that I think that we should all come to the table of what are our goals and what are our objectives for the next year, and to have some type of strategic plan. That's my feeling. Gene?
My wife corrected me the other day. The difference between a goal and objective, and David Cunningham was wrong, an objective is something you can achieve. A goal is further on out. And they seem like they're backwards there, so... We need to determine what goals are and what our objectives are. We can acquire those objectives, okay?
I completely agree with that. You set goals, yes, and objectives come out of the goals.
Yes.
Okay. So I'd like to set some goals, and hopefully we can achieve them. We have a first and a second. We have any other discussion on this? To have a special meeting in the month of October? Do we want to? Okay, so I have a first and second. So I call a motion. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? I hear none. So is this appropriate to set a date right now or try to?
It needs to be notified. So I think we need the Harbor Department's assistant, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So why don't we do what we've done? We've had two special meetings, Polly, I know that, or three. you know, if we could try to set something up in the month of October, I would appreciate it, and I'll talk to you. I think my only date that I probably can is October 20th. I have a board meeting in L.A.
Probably what I request from all of you and send it to Polly is just send us your blackout dates.
That's okay. Thank you.
Days you are not available.
Right. Yeah, and then we don't need a big space. A small space is good. I mean, just the community center would be fine. I mean, we don't necessarily have to have this. I don't envision a lot of public coming. Okay. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Yeah, a second.
Sure.
A second.
Sure.
Okay. We have a first and second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye. Thank you.